Katie Dunleavy with My Chronic Illness and Me. As someone who struggled with chronic illness for more than 15 years, I've often felt incredibly isolated in my journey. Now, as a coach for others dealing with chronic illness, I've realized I'm not alone in feeling that way. There just aren't a lot of forums out there where people can connect about their experiences with chronic illness. So this is That Space, a place where we can educate each other about different illnesses, dispel myths, and most importantly, share our stories. Let's dive in. Hi, everyone. So March is Endometriosis Awareness Month, which means that both episodes of My Chronic Illness and Me this month will feature people dealing with endo. If you or if someone else you know is dealing with endometriosis and could use some support or would like to talk or wants to reach out, you can always email me at katie@reviveandthrivecoach.com. I'm always here to listen. Today, I'm talking to Melissa, who is a community organizer at an organization called Hera Hub, which is a really amazing networking group for women entrepreneurs. I joined in January and I really enjoy it so far. Melissa, like me, is passionate about finding new ways to level up the conversation around endometriosis and to create connections between those of us who experience it. So I hope you enjoy our conversation. So, hey, Melissa.
Hi, Katie.
This is funny. This is like a totally impromptu conversation, podcast interview.
Yeah, it's like a happy accident for sure.
So, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and how we came to be in this like lovely conversation together?
Yes. So my job, my 9-to-5, I'm the Hera Hub director in our new location in San Diego in the Sorrento Mesa area. And you're a member of another location in DC. And I was chatting with the collective. The Hera Hub Collective is made up of directors, so operators and owners of the Hera Hub brand. And we were talking about different upcoming holidays. And I had shared that March is Endometriosis Awareness Month. And Julia Westfall, the director in DC and owner there, shared that she had a member named Katie who works with people with pain management. And I thought, well, that's really interesting. Let's have a chat and see what comes of it. And it turns out that our stories are a little more similar than we realized.
Yeah. It's so funny to be connected to someone where you're like, oh yeah, I think there's like something here. And then you talk to them and you're like, oh wait, this is very, very similar. There's a lot we can talk about.
Here. The whole thing. Yeah.
Yeah. And just so people know, Hera Hub is a wonderful professional networking organization that I joined recently. I'm loving being a part of it. It's really focused on women entrepreneurs and business owners and creating authentic connections between each other and teaching each other things so that we're not constantly recreating the wheel. And I've only been a member for a couple months and I'm already really finding such value in it.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that. Yeah, I've been a director here for 3 years and I've learned a lot as a director. I don't have to have all the answers for people. My job is to connect people to each other, to the resources. We help accelerate. We meet people where they are at their stage of business and we help to accelerate them. Yeah, it's been a really fun and rewarding job for that reason.
So when we first met, you had mentioned to me that part of the impetus for wanting to kind of host a larger conversation in the Hera Hub community about endometriosis or in honor of Endometriosis Awareness Month is that you were feeling like that you wanted that space and that forum to sort of share your experiences. What kind of brought that up for you, that feeling of, you know, I really want that space?
Yeah. I was in life, I've been asking myself the bigger picture questions a lot lately, being in my late 30s now and asking questions about who I am and what I want, which is just a passion of mine in general. I like being self-aware and reflective and I'm always looking forward, like, what can I do next? What is the next thing? And in part of that process, I realized I'm part of this community of women. I'm doing a lot to make sure that they have everything they need. But I took a step back and I wondered, what do I need? And who are my people? Like, they are my community. I'm with them. I'm a part of this community. But there's something that they don't know about me, right? Mm-hmm. There's something that I manage without them. I don't ask for help and support. And I was like, well, what if I did have people that I could talk to about it more freely? And it was the first time I talked about it in a group of women was here in Hair Hub. I've had a few members come up to share, like, I just learned this thing. I just learned I have endometriosis. I don't know anything about it. And I said, I'm so glad you told me. I have had this now for 20 years. And they're like, no way. And they have 1,000 questions. They have a, and I just realized that talking about it was easier than I thought. Traditionally, the only people I talked to about it were doctors, mm-hmm. my parents, if we're having another issue and I might have to have a surgery, and partners that I'm in a relationship with, and maybe a few close friends who I've kept for a long time. But unless something comes up specifically, it's hidden. You don't really talk about it. And reflecting on this thing that made me feel very isolated a lot, you know, having to call out of work, go home in the middle of a work day, stay home for multiple days, take heavy pain medication and be wonky for another couple of days to follow. Like, I'm a professional. I need my head on me. You know, I need, and sometimes just being able to share with someone, hey, this is a condition I'm struggling with and I need some understanding. I need some grace. I need some support. And here's how you can support me. I have a really supportive boss. She does not have this condition. She does not understand it, but she listens. She asked me what I needed. She's very supportive, which is wonderful. So I think I was really looking for, how can I take action? What can I do so I don't feel as isolated? I don't feel so alone. But also, I get really frustrated once the pain hits and I'm in that moment. I almost get mad at myself, Katie. Like, why didn't I do anything between the last time and this time to make this time a little bit easier? And I don't always know what I can do to make it easier, but it's turned into this sense that I have to do it myself because there aren't a lot of solutions out there. Some of the solutions that are out there aren't possible for all of us or aren't probable. And unfortunately, what it comes down to with endometriosis is truly pain management mm-hmm. rather than healing, which is very hard for someone like me who loves reflecting and healing and growing and moving forward. And then they have this thing that like anchors me down again. And it's scary and it makes me angry. Yeah.
I mean, of course it makes you angry. There's something going on in your body that you cannot control that knocks you out for days at a time, if not more than that. Like that you, as you said, don't necessarily feel comfortable at this moment sharing with everybody in your orbit. Like, yeah, that would make anyone angry.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Yeah. This is, I mean, that's another reason why it would be nice to talk about, right? Is when you have a witness to something you're going through, you don't have to carry it all by yourself. Even if that person doesn't have all the answers, but just you being able to reflect back, like, of course it feels that way. That is a comfort. That is security. That is support. That is compassion, right? There's a lot of things that happen internally that make that experience a little more manageable.
One thing I've really seen kind of across the board with folks I talk to with chronic conditions and definitely with people with endo is that feeling of isolation. Because you're right, it's like traditionally we don't talk about things that affect our reproductive organs or things that are seen as quote unquote women's issues, even though endometriosis is not just a women's issue. I think it's really beautiful. And also it's very common in people I've talked to not only want to do something to feel less isolated themselves, but then like it's almost an immediate like, and help other people not feel isolated. Like you're talking about, I don't want to feel this isolation, but let me create a space for others as well. And I've found that that's such a common thing among this community is like, I've been going through this kind of on my own and muddling through, and how can I help other people not have to do that?
Yes. Totally. Great point. Like the more people that just kind of mentioned or chatted, there was one woman that came through and she said, I need to print these documents and I'm going to see this doctor. And and she said, endo, endo, endo. And I said, hey, whoa, I would love to be able to help you right now. And you're saying some buzzwords that I know some things about, like, do you need an ear right now? And she shared with me her situation and what was going on. a little bit different than mine. The reason she's having these conversations with doctors is related specifically to fertility. Whereas for me, it started as pain. But what ended up happening is the doctor she was going to go see was the last doctor I saw.
Uh-huh.
And that's not necessarily a positive thing. I had such a bad response to only conversation. The only thing is that we did is talk. I had such a bad response to this conversation with this doctor that I just stopped seeing doctors. I was done having the same conversation, sorry to say, but often with male doctors telling me what I want, telling me what I need, telling me how things go. And I just said, hey, I really hope that you have a good experience with that doctor. I've been there. I didn't. I really hope it goes well. Like, tell me about it. So there was another sense of here's another person that maybe needs a space for conversation. And I really was like, where do we start? If nothing else, we can get together and talk about it. Create a safe space, create a space where people feel comfortable. I need a safe space to feel comfortable enough to talk. Sometimes people who don't know anything about it, they just want to fix it. Or they say, yeah. Well, if you didn't like that doctor, Melissa, why didn't you go to another female doctor?
Go find another, yeah.
20 years. Like sometimes we make choices emotionally. And sometimes, I mean, I didn't say I'm never going to another doctor ever again. It just turned out that way. And it wasn't until that moment with her that I realized that.
Sometimes you cannot any longer be a patient. Like you just need break. I definitely have gone through like years long periods of that in my, probably mostly in my 20s where I was, I had been to like a dozen doctors and I had gotten 2 colonoscopies and 6 endoscopies and, you know, like every freaking diagnostic known to man. And everyone just was like, yeah, well, we don't know, you're fine. And at a certain point, you are just so burnt out on being a patient and trying to explain to someone who's not really listening what's going on and trying to advocate for yourself. So yeah, I feel like that response of like, yeah, I'm going to stop going to doctors for a while is a very, very normal reaction to what you've experienced.
Yeah, I stopped talking about it, I think, in general. I mean, I had a few friends that, oh yeah, I have really bad periods too. Just take some Tylenol and walk it off. I'm like, That was what my PE teacher was telling me in middle school. Like that conversation between women still even hasn't changed. Like I don't have the same body that you have. There's something else happening. And even people that have the same condition, it shows up differently for them. Like it's more nuanced than that. And people don't mean poorly. Actually, I mean, I've had some people actually come at me. I had a really, really bad relationship one time and he believed that I was faking my pain, which that's like a physically unsafe space to be in. Because in a moment when I am at the mercy of someone else's help, they need to believe that it's happening. It's really hard for some people though. I still have a tiny bit of compassion there. He didn't understand. He couldn't see it. And he made sense of it by telling himself a story that I was making this up. And I've had a few doctors look at me sideways, like the emergency room trips with my mom when this was first happening. Was heartbreaking. My mom had no idea what was going on. I didn't either. Everyone assumed the first time I had a huge episode that my appendix had burst, right? So they're giving me 100% attention. They're pushing on my body. They're doing all these tests. They're telling me that I might have to go in for emergency surgery. I'm like, what is going on? Like, can someone just tell me I'm going to be okay? Worst pain of my life. Like, I couldn't hide it for my mom's sake. I had to cry. I had to scream. I had to beg for help. And that was really hard to go through. And then at the end of the day, the doctor's like, we didn't find anything.
Right. Well, what are you supposed to do with that? Right?
How do you- Until you do a laparoscopic surgery, you're not going to find anything, which is crazy.
What are you supposed to do with that then? Right. Like you're experiencing this horrible, incredibly scary thing that you don't know what's going on. It sounds like you're pretty young. You're with your mom, you know, like she doesn't know what's going on. And you're being vulnerable. You're saying, I need help. Like I'm in so much pain. You're showing that externally, right? And then as a reward for all of that, it's basically a slap in the face. Like, yeah, well, you're fine. And then I think a lot of times what happens is you kind of internalize that in like a, oh, well, okay, I better get better at hiding it then.
Right. And if I can't get support and it's going to end up being on me and I'm going to feel embarrassed, then I'm going to hide it. I'm going to grin and bear it. I'm going to deal with it. And I mean, I've got friends that say, like, I can barely have sex with my partner because my endometriosis makes it so painful. So something that's supposed to be filled with, you know, pleasure and intimacy and connecting with someone robs them of that opportunity. And so then they have to have a partner who also feels like, I can't connect with this person and I can't give. So like, that's a very clear way that it can interfere in that moment. But these more like, is she telling the truth? Did that really happen? We didn't find anything. I'm like, okay. Yeah, to answer your question, I think when this big episode hit, I think I was 19.
Yeah, that's so young.
Because I remember I wasn't living at home anymore, but I was at my parents' house and it happened in the middle of the night. And I woke up and I thought, oh, am I going to be sick? Like something's wrong with me. Like I'm in so much pain. I tried going to the bathroom. Nothing's happening, right? It's not like I have food poisoning or have the flu. It's like, why? Just pain for no reason. And it's building and building. And it was coming on fast. Like, you know, you'd have a moment of relief and then it builds and then moment of relief and then it builds. And I texted my mom and said, something's wrong. If you're awake, come in here. And she came to the other side of the house. And we kind of sat together for a while trying to see if this would go away. And we realized there was nothing else we could do. And she threw me in the car. We went to the emergency room. But I was having painful periods before that, mm-hmm. not knowing that. You know, because they say, yeah, periods are painful. You get moody. They're obnoxious. You're going to have to use all of these different toiletries to figure out how to make yourself feel comfortable in the real world. But my body was going through a lot, even in middle school and high school. I remember I was on my middle school campus. So sometime in middle school, there was a 10-day period. I had a 10-day period and I had to run to the bathroom in between every single class. No. Classes are about what, an hour, and yeah. Overshare. I was using a super tampon. So I'm talking about extremely heavy periods, changing every hour. And I'm in middle school. You're like wearing your sweater around your waist because you're worried that something might be showing, you know, your best friends are checking you as you walk away and like, you're okay, you know? And I just thought this is what everyone's going through. And we're all just supposed to do this by ourselves. And that's not a really good lesson for life. Right.
It's funny, you know, like I've talked to a lot of people about how they just thought that that was normal when they, that extreme pain, period pain or heavy bleeding, really long cycles. But it just, what you said made me think of like, why do we teach, even if someone doesn't have endometriosis or a condition that makes their cycle particularly horrible, why do we teach girls, young girls that like, this should be horrible. Like, be prepared for this to be bad. Because I think what then ends up happening for a lot of us, people with PCOS, people with endo, you know, et cetera, like, you just think, oh, well, they told me it was supposed to be bad. So, like, this just must be what they meant. And then it takes so much longer to realize, like, no, what I'm experiencing is really above and beyond what they were talking about and not how it's supposed to. But it's like that expectation setting of like, you're about to be miserable, that I feel like perpetuates so much of that.
Right. Yeah. And a really interesting point, like, how do you define each of us individually? If you're like, periods are painful, and then you have pain and I have pain, and those pains are different and we're experiencing them differently, but we both think we're normal.
Right.
That triggers into other things. I've, for my entire life, one of my kind of fun bragging points has been like, I have a super high pain tolerance. Why is that a bragging point? Why is that a good thing? Why does that excite me? What, that I have to go a long time before I ask people for help. Like, what? I have to go a long time before I take any medication. Like, I'm sorry. I don't want to have to be strong all the time.
Yeah, it's exhausting.
It is. It's very exhausting.
You're just making me think of something. Oh, the pain, how do we know? My pain is different than your pain. How do we know what is normal pain? I feel like then that also becomes such a hard thing when you're trying to seek help and see a doctor, because they have a pain scale, like what's your pain on a scale from 1 to 10, but like my 2 is somebody else's like 20. Like, because to your point, people who are in pain all the time have a very high pain tolerance. You just have to. You have to just get through the pain sometimes, even though I try to work with people not to just do that. But you're used to doing that. And so if I say 2, then the doctor's going to be like, oh, well, go home then. Like, but they don't understand that my 2 would be unbearable for them.
Right. Yes. I think the pain scale, and this isn't just a like when we talk about the pain scale, it's messed up for a lot of people in the world.
Totally.
Not just people with endo and other things that affect like our reproductive and internal systems. Like there's a lot of people that have this complaint in the world, and there's a big pharma issue as well related to this pain scale. Someday I would love to be able to have enough energy to tackle all of that. But 1 through 10 means nothing. Because when I went to the emergency room that day, I was like 10. And all of a sudden I was like, this is what 10 is, right? Because it was my 10. But if that's my 10, then what's 5? And is 5 okay? Like, at what point do you start listening? At what point do you start medicating? At what point do you start supporting? And how many of those reports need to come in at what number over what amount of time before a bigger picture change has to happen?
Right. Like if I'm at my level, you know, 7, 8 out of 20 days, like that's not sustainable. But yeah, exactly. How do you know what is sort of like livable and what is not? And I said, it's funny, it's making me think I very specifically remember a conversation I had with my partner years ago in a bar, like late at night. And it was about
these kinds of chats, right?
Yeah, hilarious. We were like drinking cocktails and he's always coming from a place of like, I'm trying to understand where you're at so that I can, you know, support you. Like it's always a good place. But we had this whole in-depth conversation about like, yeah, but like, you know, he's like, can you tell me like, if you're at a 2, say I'm at a 2. And I'm like, yeah, but my 2 is your 20. And like, he was like, okay, like how can we like standardize some of our communication around this so that like you feel like you're actually being true to what your pain is, but I understand for you what that means. And it's just like, man, if every person has to do that with every person, it's just...
And this is someone who wants to help. This is someone who's working hard to try to understand and staying in the conversation, even though it's difficult, right?
Yeah.
I mean, imagine someone who's just like, what, like this thing again, it doesn't help us feel like we're not inconveniencing other people.
No.
Right? It's not convenient to my job that I could at any moment have to be removed from that place and need to get home as soon as possible and may not be available for 1 to 4 days.
Yep. Sorry. Like
that's not exciting for the people I work with people in person 5 days a week, Monday through Friday, 9 to 5. Like that's a very challenging thing.
Yeah.
When it comes to pain, yes, what I would like to say, and I don't know that I have all the solutions, but I have some ideas around this. I think we need to kind of upgrade our pain conversations.
Mm-hmm.
Scale obviously has its limitations, I'm sure is a very interesting starting point for people, but then the conversation needs to continue. I remember being very challenged the first time I was asked to describe the pain.
Yes.
I was kind of thinking and waiting too long to answer. Apparently the doctor was with me, but a little bit impatient. So he was offering ideas like, Is it sharp? Is it dull? Is it persistent? Is it going on and off? Right. I'm like, okay, well that's a little bit helpful, but those exist in all of these pain conversations all the time in doctors. And I feel like I haven't heard any other multiple choice options yet. Yeah. I'm like, how about vibrating pain?
Mm-hmm.
How about rolling pain?
Yep.
How do I, without giving a really graphic description, describe to you what it feels like is happening to my body?
Yep.
And one of the ways that it shows up for me very frequently is it feels like, trigger warning for people who have visual concerns, it feels like I have been impaled like by a pole, like through my pelvis, like just And it can be from one side to the other or this side to this side. And I mean, it, the direction of this pole can be moved, but that's what it feels like. Like I've been run through. And that's aggressive. But that helps answer this question. The hardest part for me in trying to I really wanted to answer the question completely, fully. I wanted to give the right answer so that he had all the information so that he could help me. I had a good relationship with that doctor for many years. However, I was still learning my body. I didn't have the vocabulary. I didn't always know what even was happening because, I mean, if we're talking about middle school and high school, who hasn't disassociated? Who hasn't gone out of their body? Who hasn't found strategies for dealing with emotional and physical pain where you can't identify exactly what's happening? And it takes practice and it takes time. And then you have to be willing to vulnerably share that information with this male doctor who hopefully can help me. So it was very hard. And when the language that is being given to me is limited, it's even harder to identify. But when I had a few people talk to me about how they experience it, other women, I went, oh, I've experienced that one. Oh, I've experienced that one. And then I can also identify it a little bit faster. Right before we started recording, I was like, oh, I feel the little tinge. There's this like little tiny tinge feeling. And then I had to ask myself, is that, am I sore from my light workout yesterday? Or is my period coming and is my pain starting? I don't know. I'll find out in the next 4 hours. And it could be 2 days from now, but I mean, you know, how that pain changes throughout the day. And that's like it's the tinge. It's the one where you have an itch and you kind of scratch it and it goes away, but this doesn't go away when you scratch it.
Yeah. I know that one. Yeah. I was thinking, it's interesting. I think your idea of like more multiple choice options for maybe even for different conditions, right? Because I don't know. I don't think that like the pain lots of people experience with endo is necessarily feels the same internally to the pain, for example, with PCOS or fibroids. Like, so maybe the sort of longer term answer or potential like path forward would be condition specific multiple choice questions. Cause you know, when you were saying like, oh, I feel run through, oh my God, I know that feeling. Yeah. I feel like I'm being stabbed right in the crotch. And then it's like, how, you know, okay, there's a feeling where it's like such a deep cramp that it feels like my entire body is going to rip apart. There's the pain where all of a sudden it feels like all of my organs are glued together and can't move. Like there's the pain where I sneezed and I felt something rip actively, like on both my ovaries. Like, those are like typical things.
Suddenly very aggressively.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And if we're having these conversations, we can kind of, even if it's a little bit light, like contrast and compare, like, is it like this or like that? And yeah, really kind of taking a moment to create the language to describe the thing. And maybe that helps. I think about for children, right? Like really young kids where they go like, ow. And then they're like, oh, where does it hurt? Point to where it hurts. Yeah. If you just point to your stomach, that's it. But that's a starting point. Like, where does it hurt? Okay. Now what is that pain? Okay. And if you can direct them, maybe they can do more possibly. Because I mean, I've had the hard periods. I don't really know what changed. And this is the thing is over 20 years, this has shown up differently in my body. Maybe diet affected that. Maybe places I was living. Maybe the relationships I was in. Yes, there's probably some other, because I have anxiety and stresses and worries. And I find that sometimes things are harder when all of that is going off.
Okay.
But I've had the just really bad periods. The worst run of that was I had, I think, like 8 to 12 days that I didn't have my period over 2 months.
Oh my God.
And I just dealt with it. I just bought more tampons. Like for a while, I mean, I was spending like $40 a month in tampons. I switched to a cup. Cups work for me. I know there's a lot of different people use different things. I switched to a cup when I was 20. Very helpful for someone like me. Learn how to use it properly, clean it all the time, and world of difference. Saved a lot of money also. Still not always very comfortable, right? Like there's pain in it being there sometimes. Then there was the period that the time that I was on birth control. I went on birth control around 19 to 20, took a long time to find the right one, right? Then I was on a pretty aggressive one. I had to change that once I got older. I stopped taking birth control completely in 2019. So that had been about 5 years ago. So for about 12, 13, 14 years, I was on pill.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it did help to regulate things, I found. For me, it regulated things. It made the periods less intense. And for a while, I was kind of getting these just like 4-day periods. I was like, wow. And everyone's like, that's normal. And I'm like,
not for me.
I mean, normal for you, but this is like life-changing for me.
Yeah.
And then sometimes I love how people go, well, but you know, by taking birth control, there's all these health risks. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not going to go to the hospital all the time. So I'm feeling good about this. And I went off birth control because I wanted to connect with myself more and see who I was without hormones in my body. And I liked myself a lot. So I just decided not to return to them. There were two other times that I did try to go off of it and it was not good. My body felt very inflamed and like there was a lot going on. The pain came back and I was like back in the hospital. I was like, oh my gosh, like I shouldn't have gone off my birth control, right? So then I'm worried that this is my only option. There's just so many components to this. I'm sure you've had a lot of these conversations. The scariest part was even with the birth control, even in the times when it was the most manageable, it didn't mean that there wasn't pain.
Right.
And I was really scared because at that point, the pain was completely unpredictable. When and how intense could happen anytime.
Or how long. And
driving down the highway, bam, got to get off the road now, might die on the freeway, like got to get off the freeway, you know, just could be. And I feel very lucky now, but it's sucks to say lucky because as I described before, my current situation is like a 1 to 4 day window of between the pain and the medication, not being in a good place, but it's always around my period and it's always day 1 or 2. So at least I know it's coming, right? And my period could be on a 27 to 32 day cycle. It's not even, but it's so much more predictable than it ever was before. And so I'd like take the small wins, I suppose.
Yeah. What have you thought about in terms of, you know, you mentioned at the beginning that you kind of went off of going back to doctors for a while. Where are you at now? Or have you, you know, talked about surgery? Like, tell me a little bit about that part of your journey.
So I've had, I think, about 6 surgeries. The last one I had was quite a while ago. I would say it's been at least 10 years since my last surgery because I stopped. I said, that's enough. I'm not doing another surgery unless there's a good reason to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And the last surgery I had they've all gone very well. The first surgery was I'm going to answer your first question, which was, where am I at with it now? And then I'll take a step backward. I changed my insurance this year so that I can start going back to doctors because I do want to have these conversations. I had shared that when I am in that pain, part of the struggle is the frustration and the anger that this is happening. And I turn it on myself and I start feeling like, why didn't I do anything? Well, a simple starting point is talking to people, right? And that includes doctors. So kind of having those conversations again, is there new information out there? Right. I mean, I feel like I learned everything about endometriosis the first year I had it. I just don't hear a lot of newness. I hear a lot of other things that are similar now. And like fibroids, I didn't know a lot about fibroids before. And I've had a roller coaster with my experience. And I've really been, I'll say, independent, but it feels isolation, right? It feels like isolation, but I claim it as independence that I've just been taking care of myself. So I'm looking forward to this year very positively to see what is out there? You know, in this conversation with you, I know that you have great resources to offer as well. Like, I'm excited to explore those. I want to talk to people. I want to dip into this a little more and see where I can feel like I am doing something for myself instead of being a victim of my situation, which is a very uncomfortable state to be in. So to jump all the way back, I remember talking to my sister because I was very shy about nudity, sex, a lot of intimate and vulnerable things were very difficult for me to talk about. So I didn't go to my mom. I went to my sister and I said, like, I'm having some pain. I'm having some issue. I don't know what it is. I went to Planned Parenthood, and I know Planned Parenthood is very helpful for people. I had a very challenging experience there. And so I said, I don't know where to go, because I was doing it all by myself. And my sister said, you need to go to a doctor. You need to go see a gynecologist or an OBGYN or somebody. Like, you can't just go to Planned Parenthood. Like, you should be getting regular PAPs. Like, I didn't even have that happening in my life. Again, this was around 17, 18.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, just go see the doctor that I go see. Mom and I both see the same doctor. This is a doctor I had a long relationship with.
Okay.
He did my mom's hysterectomy. He delivered both of my sister's children, and he's the only person that I've gone through surgery with.
Okay.
But again, limited. We went so far and it was just the same thing every time I went in there. The first surgery. So he said, we went through a series of questions, my sexual history, my everything.
Mm-hmm.
So interesting. Just put that all into somebody else's hands.
Right.
And he said, yes, I think you might have endometriosis. This is something that has to be diagnosed through a surgery. Most people hear this information and they wait a long time to do anything about it. And I'm going to suggest you go home, think about it, and make a decision soon instead of waiting. Do you want to go in for an exploratory surgery? I remember saying that a lot the first time. And I said, okay. And I went home and I talked to my sister, and then I talked to my mom. And they both said, we trust him. If this is something that he thinks you're going through, you need to do this. And to the best of my knowledge, neither of my mom nor my sister have endometriosis. They have had other, you know, pains and concerns. My mom's very happy that she had her hysterectomy. My grandmother had a lot of pelvic pain, fortunately. So listened to the doctor, had our first surgery, was super nervous. I mean, besides my wisdom teeth, I'd never had a surgery, right? And now, like, I'm like, but, you know, my tattoo, like, don't mess up my tattoo. Like, I had no idea what was going to happen. Like, don't mess up the tattoo on my hip, you know?
They don't prepare you. Like, the doctors, in my experience, they do not prepare you for the fact that you are about to undergo major systemic abdominal surgery.
Yes. And I was left to my imagination. How little or how big this could be was, like, almost my choice. And then I wake up and they're telling me that the surgery went well. Don't know what that means. They removed cysts that were hemorrhaging in my body. And don't worry, Melissa, everything looks really good. You'll be able to have kids someday.
Oh, God.
And I'm sitting there like, the fuck? You know, like, what?
Yeah.
This is how I learned what I was dealing with. I, from then on, it was like the best, worst news ever. It's like, there's a chance you couldn't have even had the option to have children. Melissa likes options, period. You can't take something away from me. That doesn't work for me. So yeah, grateful, but also what? Like, I get to deal with something that's different than, you know, what boys and girls grow into men and women to learn about themselves. You know, I grew up in a very simple mindset around these things. And the next surgery, I think about six surgeries. The next surgery, you know, I had like a cyst the size of a golf ball. Like, I had cysts that were bursting. That was they confirmed that I probably had a burst cyst when I was on the freeway and had to get off the freeway.
Yep.
And that's why they can't see anything, because your body then kind of absorbs and breaks down what happens. And there's nothing really left to deal with. Everything that they've ever biopsied has always been benign. Also was a scary moment. Like, it could not be benign, right? That's great news. But also, what am I dealing with here? And I would just tuck away some of the worry and anxiety until the next time I had an issue. And so I was really jumping from surgery to surgery, it felt like. And that was my journey. And
yeah.
I had to make a decision at some point that I don't want my body just cut into for no reason. And I know it's not no reason, but it started to feel like no reason to me, because longevity-wise, What is that surgery doing for me? And these, most of these surgeries, I was on birth control, right? So it's still, we're doing everything we're supposed to. I'm doing my diet. I've got my hormones running the way that my doctor wants. Things are looking good every time they go in there. And I'm like, get out of my body.
If you don't mind, like what? So are they doing excision when they go in each of these times? Are they doing ablation? Were they cutting out, like if they found endometriosis lesions, were they cutting them out or were they doing ablation where they kind of burn it off?
Okay. So interesting question. I've never been asked and I don't completely know, but here's what I do remember hearing. Burn was one of the words. So they were probably burning it out. I've also heard the word scrape. Mm-hmm. So I think that's related to the DNC as well.
It's not that unusual, honestly, for people to be like, I don't know. What do you mean? I had surgery. They told me I needed surgery. I had surgery. Yeah. And considering this was what you said, like 10 years ago, you had your last one. It may have been, sounds like it was ablation, which used to be the norm, which is the burning of the lesions where it doesn't remove them. It just basically burns off the top. It creates a lot of additional scar tissue. And now it's very more widely known and the gold standard is excision, which means that you actually take out the lesion.
And it's not that I wasn't asking these questions, but how detailed do you get before you don't understand anymore? And
I think a big part of the struggle, and I 100% had this personally experienced this personally too, like, how do I know what I'm supposed to ask? You know, like when I first heard the word endometriosis, I was like 17 and I was just like, oh, okay. Like, and you know, for probably.
If you have a name for it, I assume you know something about it.
Exactly. You just sort of trust that they know what they're talking about. I think it's really normal to have an experience where you basically do what the doctor said, whether that's not have surgery, go on the birth control pill, do this medication, do have surgery. But then they just say like, okay, we did this thing. And you're like, okay, like I'll ask these questions that I know to ask, but I don't know what else to ask. And so then you just only have the information that they give you and you don't know where to go from there.
I may have been really lucky with the doctor I had beyond just feeling comfortable. Because whether or not he was the best, I felt comfortable. For the first time, someone was helping me and not belittling me. I felt advocated for. I felt like my doctor was advocating for me and making sure, because he knew the system. He knew how insurance worked. He knew how the hospitals worked. He knew his availability. He was so good at getting me the support how and when he felt was the best based on his knowledge of the system, which was nice. There was less that I had to deal with. So it's sad to me to hear that, like, you couldn't even, I mean, how long before you got a diagnosis?
I was 17 when I first heard the word endometriosis. I was 32 when I got my first surgery and diagnosis.
And this whole time you don't know what's going on. Like, yeah. That would devastate me because I've already been through so much. I would not be okay with that. I would be so angry at the world.
Oh, yeah. And actually, I've told this story on the podcast before, so I'll just do a short version of it. But like, actually, after my first surgery, I woke up and he was like, you don't have endometriosis. And I was like, I was devastated, like literally because of what you just said. I've been through so much. It's been at that point, what, it was like 15 years since I had been dealing with this. And he woke me up and was like, nope, this also is not it. And I just went into a tailspin. Like my mom was there when I woke up and I looked at the clock and it was only like a half an hour after I had gone under. And I just started, and I was like, mom. And she was like, honey. And I was like, mom. And she was like, honey. And I was like, they didn't find it. And she was like, honey, you have to calm down. Like, and I just like freaked out. And it turns out that I do, because they took a couple biopsies. He didn't really remove anything else than that because he thought I didn't have it. Biopsies positive. I had a second surgery like a couple months ago, actually. And they took out so much stuff. Like I 100% do have it, but it's, yeah, that was rough.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
But I'm curious to hear your story about your surgeon, because it does sound like, I mean, on the one hand, having a doctor who you feel like comfortable with and that is taking care of you and is advocating for you mm-hmm. is so important. Mm-hmm. And it also sounds like, you know, it sounds like he was doing the absolute best he could with what he knew and his expertise.
Yeah. I felt that way at the time. I really felt that way. And I haven't changed my opinion of that with what I learned now. I'm like, I still think he was doing his best. And even some of those conversations that I disagree with, like, let's not focus on having a child. And he was very honest. He said, I would be very sad one day if you decide you want to have a child and you're not able to, and then you wonder if there was anything I could have done as a doctor to help you in the future. He's like, I'm doing everything I can to make sure you have that choice in case you decide you want to have children. Because that was this, he loved delivering babies. And he loved seeing women not in pain. Like, he listened and he helped. And he made me feel like he was helping. And at that point, that's all that mattered.
Yeah. That's interesting because it's like every doctor should make us feel like that, but it's so rare. And also then it sounds like he kind of hit the upward limit of his expertise at some point with you, right? Like ideally you would have been having excision and not ablation, and ideally, you know, like, who knows, but
right.
It's hard because it's like, I hear you talking about him and I can see like how kind of both, it sounds like almost grateful for him that you are, but also I'm hearing you say that like 6 surgeries and how many years, and then you were like, I just can't do this anymore. Like, so I'm just, it's interesting that you had such a mixed.
It just seemed like a lot. It seemed like, I mean, one of the times that I had surgery was over Christmas, you know, and it was like, I'm high and like recovering. Like, hey, everybody, like, I'm with you, you know, sparkly eyes. Like, I felt bad, but, you know, and we had to do things in between. I was also like in college a lot of that, right? So it's like in between classes. So when you're on your school break or when you're home for your winter.
Woohoo!
Supposed to be doing stuff. I'm just watching reruns of House or something. Like, I remember watching a lot of House. I think there was something about him going through pain and me going through pain that like felt right. And then my next step was to try to get more information from an endocrinologist. And I did not like that experience. And part of the conversation I was having with that person was to ask what my options were for freezing eggs. Mm-hmm. I just decided to go off birth control. I don't have an established doctor here in San Diego. I have endometriosis. I'm considering freezing my eggs. What do I need to know? And I hated the conversation.
What did you hate about it?
I really didn't like being told a lot. It sounds quite simple, but I mean, women like you all want the same thing. Not something any woman wants to hear. I know what you want. You want to feel like you have control in your life. Okay, who doesn't? Also, he talked me out of considering freezing my eggs. He says, you have plenty of time. You shouldn't be concerned. Have your doctor send over all of the results from your previous surgeries. Since it's been a while since you've gone through those surgeries, I want to look, you know, and see what that is, see where you are now. It just felt like it was going to be a long and arduous process with somebody that I wasn't connecting with right away.
Yeah.
And he asked like good personal questions, but I didn't feel the rapport. So I didn't want to answer them. It felt a little bit invasive rather than supportive. Mm-hmm. You know, what is your relationship like with your current partner? How often are you guys having sex? Sure. But anything beyond that, I was like, I don't know how this is relevant. But, and I'm like, and what is an endocrinologist? Tell me more about you. He also bragged a lot about this cool upcoming stuff that he's learning. And it's so exciting. They're not even supposed to be talking about it yet. I was like, are you pitching me for something? Like, it just, everything was off. Like, we weren't connecting. And this part really concerned me. So he was trying to get me to go back on birth control. So he wasn't meeting me where I was at. He wasn't listening. I said, I am in love with the person I am now. I have not got to experience myself growing up through my entire 20s and now into my 30s, right? I haven't gotten to experience myself not on hormones.
Yeah.
I want to know who I am and I love this person and I'm into it. And I just want to know that I'm not going to hurt myself by not being on these hormones. And he wanted me to go back on birth control. Specifically, he wanted me to get an IUD. If you have endometriosis, IUDs can be even more challenging. So I was like, what are we doing here, guy? I go home with a booklet full of like brochures and pamphlets and ideas and a printed flyer on bright orange paper about some study that might be happening. I'm like, I wanted to throw it in the trash. I didn't, of course. I stuck it in a pile somewhere and I probably still have it in a box in my closet.
Yeah.
But I got really sad. I said, if this is the person I found as maybe the person to go to, and I could have been wrong, but I just was like, that was too much buildup to even say that I might want to have kids someday. What if I freeze my eggs? That was so hard to do. And he said, you have time. I don't think you should be considering that right now.
Sounds like a experience.
Yeah. I was like, that's not what I needed to hear. I wanted to hear, if that's true, give me a medical reason why I should not consider that. I'm a human being with an interest. Like, listen and advise me, certainly. But then tell me I do have that option. And tell me what steps I could take to do that. I had, in that pamphlet, zero information about freezing eggs.
What you actually came to.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So didn't work out very well.
So you said that, you know, you changed your insurance this year specifically so you could start going back to doctors.
Right.
What are you going to do differently this time to feel more comfortable or to know what you're looking for? How are you thinking about that?
Yeah. I want to find a female doctor just to see if some of the conversation is different, the tone of the conversations. I don't have anything specifically against men in this regard. It's just that all of my previous doctors in this have been male. So I want to talk to a female doctor, especially since I know how important it is to have like vocabulary around pain, someone who can at least understand how a period actually feels.
Yeah.
I've done my best to describe it to men who really want to understand. And I'm like, you know, when you really need to go to the bathroom and everything is really crampy and then you go and you feel so relieved, imagine never getting the relief. Like, that's the best description I can come up with where they go, that would suck.
And you're like, yeah.
Enjoy their bathroom time. Yes. I mean, we all do. But, you know, they get that a little bit. So I want to see a female doctor to give myself that chance to have a different kind of conversation, or maybe a few female doctors. I also want to be practicing talking to more people about it, right? Bringing other women together, creating a safe space, hearing their story, what worked for them. And I don't mean a space where people are trying to heal each other, right? I mean a space where we're listening to each other, which is healing. I'm not talking about healing endometriosis, right? I'm talking about the power that can just drain out of you if these experiences aren't going well. You can refill with these groups of people or individuals that understand. The conversation I'm having with you, I'm like, there's tons of things I want to do now. All right. I want to get people talking. I want to listen to more of your podcast. I want to check out your awesome resource page. I want to go visit a doctor. I want to do a little more digging. There's some things I've learned about my body throughout the years. Around my period, I increase my potassium. I decrease caffeine and sugar and alcohol, except wine does help take away the pain before I have to take an opiate. So sometimes a few glasses of wine means I don't have to take an opiate. Maybe there is more information out there. I keep saying, probably in a bitter way, I do think I'm probably a little jaded at about some of this. 20 years and no new information. What the hell is happening in this industry? So I think if I start talking to people, do some light research, be open to the information that's around me, see some new doctors, I think then there'll be another step that I will understand to take. And honestly, what I should do is give myself some time to really write about some of these experiences and sit with them so that I can do some emotional healing around them, so that I don't feel the resistance and the pain and the anxiety as much around it.
For what it's worth, you don't sound bitter or jaded at all. I mean, the way you're talking about your experience, it's completely normal the way that you feel about all of this. And you're right that there has been very little, if any. I mean, I think there's been some new stuff, you know, in the past couple of years, but very little. In no way the massive changes we should see at all. Like, you know, still have to be cut open to get a diagnosis. That's ridiculous. And so I don't think it's, and I'm just talking from my own experience, there's times when I feel bitter as hell about all of this. Like, why do I have to be an expert in a medical field? Why should I know more than some of my doctors about this thing? Like, that's freaking absurd. And I get really angry about that. And so it doesn't come across or sound bitter or jaded to me, but also if it did, and that's how you feel, then it's very warranted.
Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate you validating that. I'm reminded that recently I think I was in like a breath class or something, and I went, oh, I know I can feel my feelings, and I know I don't have to feel things if I don't have particular feelings about them, but also I don't have to be okay with shit. Like, I like had this moment of like, if I don't like something, I can just not like it. And, yeah. And that can be enough to just say, I don't like that. Or I can then do something about it if I want to. So what you're kind of saying is like, or what I hear you inviting me to do, what I'm hearing from this is, if I am feeling bitter, that's fine. There might be reason for it, but I'm not coming off as bitter. These experiences are real. And these are things that have been very challenging. I do love art and creativity. I have a very highly active imagination and creative brain. I love problem solving, coming up with ideas, thinking through problems, strategizing. Like, on every level, I get to be really creative sometimes. I found an Instagram account that a female photographer created around endometriosis. And I think actually, yeah, I'll look it up, or I'll send it to you and we can share it. She started photographing herself when she was in pain. And then she started photographing other women when they were in pain. And she also has them sometimes, like, they find all their scars and they label them and they create like a constellation on their belly and they take a picture of it. Like, just little things, like, there's something real, delicate, sensitive, kind, even, like, oddly, like, this is why I freaking love art. Like, I was like, I dig this. And just scrolling for 30 minutes through this stuff, I felt a little bit calmer. And I was like, yeah, I need to get involved, right? I need to do something more, even if I just sit maybe with this Instagram account a little bit. There was a post that was on there. These don't happen often. I just found the one where they were part of a chat group somewhere, maybe on Facebook, and then reported in and talk about those moments where you don't realize what's on the table. There was a woman who was newly, not even diagnosed, but like newly coming into the world. She's married, has two children, house, job, like by most means established in the world, starts having weird pains, going to doctors, not getting information, begging for help, asking for help. I know fibroids was one of the things that she was struggling with. This is where I learned about fibroids. Because again, I stopped looking up a lot of things. I don't know if that was the cause specifically, but the things that were causing her pain did take her life. Mm-hmm. And I went, people can die from this shit. Like, I'm not suggesting I'm in that state, but when it was like, oh, that's what's at stake here. That's what I'm dealing with. Like, that stake keep getting higher and higher. That was sad, simply just devastatingly sad to come across. But the part that frustrated me the most is I went to that original post and she was asking for help for a long time. Mm-hmm. And people were giving her information and she was going to the doctors, and even think she might've been from Canada. I'm not sure, but she posted a post kind of 2 weeks before she passed away that said, when will my pain be enough? And that rung through me for the next week, right? When will me saying something's wrong, I'm in pain, be enough?
What can I do to support you?
this is the biggest step I've ever taken. This is the biggest step I've ever taken, is just to have a large, like, to taking the time to sit and think and feel and communicate around this has been really powerful for me. And I love that you have done so much of the research, that you are communicating with people around this. It was me finding the Instagram account that made me think, maybe I should do a series of plays based on interviews that I've done with women, you know? And then when I realized, like, you've done so many of these things, I thought, yes, I almost want to ask, like, how can I help amplify or support what you're already doing? Because you have the structure, right? I don't have to, like, reinvent a wheel. Like, I almost want to say, what can I do? Right? Because for me personally right now, this has been fantastic.
I'm so glad to hear that. And I'm so grateful. I feel very honored that you feel comfortable and felt comfortable sharing with me. It means a lot. I know it's not easy. And I really appreciate that too. Like, you know, I really appreciate that. Like, how can we help each other? I think there are a myriad of ways, and I'm really excited to think more about that together.
Yeah. I think at the minimum, I want people to know that they're not alone. Absolutely. Because I feel relief when I see posts. I feel relief when I see communities of people talking about these things. I get excited about the idea that other people might want to walk in the room and have the conversation. And then again, with the knowledge and resources you have, they could walk out with more than what they came in with. And yes, I like that. Because even if nothing ever changes for me, at least I can make some change around me, bring other people relief that I didn't get. I think relief is such a powerful word, physically, emotionally, and we need each other. We can't do these things alone.
Really, truly cannot. This was great. Thanks, Melissa.
Thank you.
Hi, everyone. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Melissa. It really meant a lot to me that she felt comfortable sharing her experiences with me, and I hope you found something to connect to in her story. I'm also really excited about continuing to think with her about ways we can bring people together around endo. So if you want to be involved, or if you're interested about me or learning more about coaching, you can email me at katie@reviveandthrivecoach.com. You can find me on my website at reviveandthrivecoach.com or on Instagram at reviveandthrivecoaching. See you next time.